In my house, we call April monk season. In our tradition, the monks that are our spiritual advisors, they are in a winter retreat between January and March. And so they take the opportunity to stay in one place, to spend time in solitude, to do extra practice. And, for the most part, not do a lot of communicating or organizing with the outside world. And we do a, we try hard, to respect that. And we don't, you try not to reach out and try not to get a sense of what's coming when they start to move about. But we also do what's practical, and so do they, and we'll hear from them. And one of the main things we do at Portland Friends of the Dhamma is bring monastics here to be an example to the community, to teach, to spend time with our community here and the wider community in the Portland metro area. But that period, January, February, March, is the time to be patient. And that can be difficult. But one way that, one thing that makes it easier for me is knowing why they take a winter retreat. So not all the monks, not all the Western Theravada monks take a winter retreat, but the monks in the Ajahn Chah lineage that live here in the West, as I understand it, they do what's called the Rains Retreat, which is like a summer time during the summer where they kind of stay in one place, not not traveling longer than 7 days. They follow the structure of the lineage in Thailand. That's the traditional kind of stay in place time in Southeast Asia. Whereas in, Western US, that's the time to get things done, to move about. It's safe, it's sunny, there's more light. So they follow the structure of the Rains Retreat, but also it's practical to get a lot done at that time, to do building projects, to receive visitors, to kind of flow with the seasons and the way of Western life. And so instead of, making a case for the Rains Retreat in the West to be in the winter, which would make a lot of sense. It's the same kind of idea, when the weather's bad, stay in place. Don't go wandering, settle into solitude and quiet to practice. They added a 3 month period instead of, sort of arguing for a different 3 month period. They added one. It's a big deal, to stay connected and respectful to the lineage, but also be practical, and get some time of quiet solitude and extra practice, which is, of course, paramount to their lives. I knew it, but I didn't quite understand it until just recently, the reasoning behind that. And it's really beautiful. I mean, it's just another way that the monks in our lineage, this lineage, go the extra mile. So then I feel really inspired, to go the extra mile for them and for us and for the sake of being practical. There's so many reasons to go the extra mile. But essentially, it's looking at the big picture of harmony and continuity, and but also what makes sense in the conditions. And it's hard to hold all of that, I think, in as a lay person. So monk month is when we find out more about where they're going and what they're doing and whether they're coming here and when, and all the changes that ensue after we find all of that out. It's just a busy time for planning and organizing and anticipating. They're not even here yet. But it's when kind of things, it's spring. It's kind of this blooming period of plans for the future and communications. And it's really lovely and very busy. I've had the great fortune this year of being in contact with some of the senior monastics and some of this planning that's going on. And I remember years ago, if I got an email from a senior monastic, I practically shut the computer. Okay, I need to absorb that. Because they're my teachers and the example for my world. So also I was quite intimidated, by any by communications. And I remember one time all this kind of stuff was happening. This was many years ago, and I was kind of working through it. There was some stuff going on at the monastery down in California, and the phone rang. And this was must have been pre-cell phones or pre-cell phones in my house, because Todd picked it up and he goes, "Oh, it's Long. It's Ajahn Pisano." What? And then he just called to reassure me about something that I was having a hard time with, and to have a short conversation, and to invite me to the monastery. And it was very lovely. It was lovely, and now I'm almost giddy. I've been going back and forth with Ajahn Kurunadamo for several weeks, and he'll be coming in June, and then he'll be coming in July. And I've known him for a long time. He was one of the first monastics I spent any time with here in the Pacific Northwest. And so it's wonderful to have this contact going on. But beyond that, it's I'm getting these sort of daily reminders of what really beautiful, really useful, really skillful communication can look like. It's extremely kind, extremely clear. But at the same time, very, it's hard to describe, kind of, but their life, one of the ways that they practice is to only take that which is offered, and to not make demands, and to not make their preferences known. And so it's been very, I'm sort of like a, yeah, you're coming and you're gonna stay here and what do you want to do? And he's kindly receiving that. And maybe it's not that wild. It's like maybe it's like that in my head. I think I'm fairly composed in my communications, but I can see him, kind of pumping the brakes a little bit. Oh, we'd be happy to do that, but only if it's not a burden to the community. We'd be happy. That would be fine if it works for everybody who's making the offering. He's very careful to always be reminding us that we're caring for them, yes, but we're caring for us too. What is a burden? What is a boundary? Is something really being offered, or is it being sort of thrust upon somebody? So these reminders to be very careful about how we make offers, that we make them very clearly, that we make them very thoughtfully. So can you? We're gonna, they'll be coming. There's four senior monastics coming to Portland Friends of the Dhamma in June for our day, a day-long benefit, but also for to acknowledge Sekula's years of practice in founding this center, and for my stepping into a new role come the summer. And so we've got this real lovely support from the monastics, and Longpo Pasano is coming, and Ajahn Chah, who's his attendant, and Ajahn Kurudamo, who was one of the founders of the Pacific Hermitage, Ajahn Titipano, and Debbie Stamp, who's just a fabulous layperson at Abayagiri. Three of them are driving and two of them are flying, and we've got co accommodations all over the east side of Portland, and so it's a lot to organize. But there's this, this kind of real consistent encouragement to keep it simple. Keep it clear. Make offer what you're able to do without overburdening yourself. Not just me, but kind of this is what I'm picking up, like our community is making these offerings, to a degree. And so these communications, and what I love so much about spending time with the monastics, the monks and nuns in our tradition who come here to visit and teach, is their example. I when somebody comes here to teach, I might remember one, kernel of wisdom. I shouldn't be admitting this. That something will stick, I take that with me forever. But what sticks every time, the whole time I'm paying attention, is their example. The example of their composure, of their dignity, of their reticence in some areas, of their attention, their ability to really bring attention. I drove down in a van to Abayagiri one time to the monastery in California with Ajahn Chagananda, who's a monk who now lives out on the East Coast, and some other lay people and another monk. And it's a 12-hour drive, and so I was fidgeting the whole time because that's me. trying to get comfortable moving around, switching my seat, legs crossed, uncrossed, uncrossed, legs crossed, uncrossed, eating whatever. No, I probably wasn't eating. That was probably the only thing I wasn't fidgeting with was food. And every time I looked at Ajahn Chagananda, he was still just sitting there, composed, quiet, lovely, settled, balanced. And he's not doing it for show. He's doing it because he's practiced in bringing forth and maintaining this kind of composure, this calm settledness. So just sitting next to him or near him in a van for 12 hours was 12 hours of learning. He didn't have to say anything. And 12 hours of learning about me, which is less comfortable. What am I doing? Where am I in space? What's my response? What's my reaction? What is this fidgeting? I did some learning. Ajahn Chah said that. Let your senses be your teachers. Do you have eyes? Teacher. Ears? Another teacher. Nose? Another teacher. Taste? Mouth? Another teacher. And we're not asking, what do these conditions mean about me? Where the reflection is, what does my reaction to my conditions, what is it telling me about the learning ahead of me? What is my reaction telling me about what I need to develop, what I need to cultivate, what I need to let go? I'm not reading anyone's mind. I'm reading some faces. But I think we all have that experience. So, and kind of, it wasn't really hitting home. This day long that's coming up is this big transition. I kept calling it the fundraiser. Finally, a couple wonderful, more than a couple, lovely community members were like, listen, there's kind of a theme there. Some big things going on. And so I appreciated that. And then Sakula let me know that she actually already had tickets for the Tuesday following it to leave the country. Yo, yeah. You just drop that little bomb into conversation. So things will change pretty quick. And then, someone asked me, are you nervous about that? How do you feel? What's, you know, does it feel like it's going to be really different? And I said, well, my supervisor will be gone. But the Dhamma will be here. These guardrails are built in to everything we do. The example of the monks, the balance of the community, the Noble Eightfold Path, the accountability to the hierarchy in our tradition, the bigger picture, the accountability to the community. It feels very safe because of how strong the container is. So that was lovely. That was lovely to notice. So I think I'll leave it there. And Sakula, would you like to say a few words or?
That was lovely. Yeah, I'll say a little bit. I think there's probably a couple of people here that don't have details that I'll just kind of fill in a little bit. I founded this place 24 years ago and eventually was in connection with and accountable to Abaye Gerry Monastery, and then was through the monastics was acknowledged as the spiritual director of Portland Friends of the Dhamma. And in June, I'm retiring. Jessica is stepping into this role. So she'll be a lay minister accountable to Abaye Gerry, just as I was, or I am, and the spiritual director. And I like the reflection on the fact, the truth that, the Dhamma is here, the connection with Abaye Gerry is here. We're very, very fortunate to have a community member who not only has been recognized as having the capabilities, both through me and through the monastics, as to take on this role, but that she's willing to do it. She's been in training for 3 years, gradually taking over more and more responsibilities, and I've been stepping back a bit. It's just been really beautiful for me to see the transition happening slowly but surely. The community, turning their focus toward Jessica as the leader, been leading programs for quite some time now. It's really, I feel as I go, very positive that this community will stay anchored in the Dhamma associated with these fantastic monastics. And in all of that, recognizing that Jessica and I are two very different people. And so it will be different because she's a different person. For one thing, she's much younger. And so that will be interesting. It will be lovely. And I just really want to encourage the community to embrace, and support the differences. I mean, she's stepping into a job that she has a lot of experience in now, but until she actually is the person where the buck stops, you can't really tell. You can't understand what it's really like. So I'll be gone for a year, and that will give her time to really both herself and the community to really adjust to we're so far ahead of the game. So I just feel really fortunate that Jessica can take this, and I'm really impressed by her leadership and her willingness, and her wisdom and ability to put in the effort and willingness to put in the effort, because it's a big job, and I believe she's going to do it beautifully. There will be challenges, both for herself and for some community members. And the practice, we're so fortunate to have this practice where we can acknowledge that when a challenge comes up, that there's a way out, and the way out is by being responsible for what we feel we're suffering around individually, what you feel you're suffering around, what she feels she's suffering around. It's a strong community we have here, a strong leadership, we have here. Great board. The board will completely change. And because of the COVID and the shutdown and whatnot, our board has actually stayed together for 8 years. And so it needs to change. And so really appreciate those who are stepping forward and, going to be there to support Jessica as her board, new board member. So that's also a big responsibility, but it's really beautiful to see this happening. I'm very, very happy to be stepping out at a time when the place is going so well. And but I will miss you. I'm kind of giving a talk that I probably should wait. I'm gonna to
Okay.
be repeated
To be
at the day of the transition, which is June 22nd, I believe, Saturday day long. Okay, that's enough.
rerun. You'll have more to say by then, I'm sure. Okay.